This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, halflings! It's me, Jasper William Cartwright, and I am joined today by...
Hi, my name is Olivia, but you can call me Liv. I was just struck by the fact that it was such a smooth intro, Jasper, and I've missed you because I've been trying to do the intros, and it's been horrendous for everyone, so thank you so much for being
Liv,
here.
Liv, you reached heights you never before reached.
Like, that's true. And lows never before reached.
That's true. Yes. The highest pitch sounds that have ever been heard on this,
hey,
on
look,
this show.
Mr. Average is back, okay? So don't worry about it. I got you covered.
Vanilla's the most popular flavor for a reason. Everybody
Heck
loves
yeah.
it.
Whoa, okay, that's Jeremy, you've crossed the line. You've crossed the line on Three Black Halflings calling me vanilla, sir. That is too far.
Everybody loves vanilla.
Too far, sir.
Okay, sorry, and... Rocky Road.
I accept.
And I'm Jeremy Cobb. Michelle Nguyen Bradley calls me Jeremy. Oh, Jeremy. That's what it is. Jeremy Jeremy. It has to be said with guttural sounds.
You got to get some. Yeah, got to.
And Spanish like ours.
Okay, so, Spanish like ours. I love the fact that
Spanish,
we have stage directions being added in now. What are we doing today, Jeremy?
We are about to do an interview. We have guests here, everyone. Guests from Roll 20. We have the VTT that Roll almost 20. All of you have probably used, and some of you might even be working on right now. We have Andrew Searles, the product manager, and Morgan Buck, the CTO.
Hi.
Hello,
Bill. Hey. Welcome to the show.
So glad to be
welcome.
Here. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
The wrong dungeon and the wrong dragons.
Full prince vibe? Woof!
This makes them even more black!
Cake glitches and pitches.
And lands in the cusp of a teaspoon.
Oh, no!
On a nat 20.
No!
You think this is just a game?
That's disgusting and I love it.
Yeah. We're about to get into something real big now.
Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. So you all, I guess we always start our interviews by asking about your nerd origin story, because this is a nerdy show, and frankly, Roll20 is a nerdy site. So please, what is your nerdy origin story? Were you born to this? Did you choose this life? Did you have to find it at a later age? Please tell us.
Or was it foisted upon you?
Yes.
I think that I fall in the foisted category. So I was in the second grade, and my best friend's older brother was running a campaign of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and other strangeness. And for whatever reason, you know, 12-year-old decided that he needed to test out the campaigns that he was running. And so he recruited the 2 8-year-olds to test his material on. So I got started really early. I started buying my own books right then around second or third grade, played a lot of Palladium games before getting into other stuff. And then that ended up being my like ticket into the gaming circles and the nerdy groups in late elementary school. Cause this guy sheepishly comes up to me one day and says, I have this book. It was D&D second edition. And I can't figure out the rules to it, but I heard you knew how to play these games.
You had the connect.
Yeah. So I taught them how to play D&D.
I love the ambition. I love the ambition of this 12-year-old as well, being like, yeah, you know who's a reliable audience? 8-year-olds.
Yeah. They can't even tell the dice apart.
Yeah. And what about you, Andrew?
Yeah, well, it was a dark and stormy night. And I was born into a household that played D&D. Through a tumultuous start, I eventually got, my mom actually taught me how to play D&D when I was eight, ten. Yeah. I remember sitting on the living room floor with just like books all around me. It's one of the ways I learned how to read, or why I wanted to learn how to read.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I just, it hooked me right away. Just the possibilities and the level advancements. And man, I soaked it all up. Oh, I tried running a campaign when I was young, and it was disastrous. All of my mom's friends, who were like many, like tens of years older than I was, all just sort of like let me go with it, but it was just disastrous. But yeah,
TTRPG kiddos absolutely rock spelling bees. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Sure. Like,
guess which 10-year-old knows how to spell equipment.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. Plus, also, I feel like you'd get used to some pretty weird letter combinations with all the like spells and stuff that are just like, you know, I'm like a kid that can spell tenses is probably pretty good spelling other random. Do you know what I mean? I feel like like tenses floating disk. I'm like, okay, you could probably.
Although it did really backfire on like Thaco, and I was like, don't you not know what Thaco is? My teacher's like, what are you talking about?
Oh my goodness,
that's amazing.
I'm not sure. Yeah.
Yeah. When, so your journeys have since brought you to Roll20, which I would actually love to hear about the history of Roll20 as a site, because as I started playing, I think in 2018, and I think it already existed when I started playing, but I know very little about its origins or where it came from.
Yeah, I think people would love to hear about that.
Yeah, so I'm going to get dates wrong here because I did not prep my notes. But basically, what happened was that the three founders of the company, Richard, Nolan, and Riley, they were high school friends. They all played a bunch of D&D. Wait, I'm going to get this wrong. Either they played together in high school or they played together in college. And either college or the end of college prompted them to like move away from each other. And they were frustrated. They couldn't continue the game that they'd been running. Riley was a programmer and whipped up a little solution for them with a very like rudimentary virtual tabletop space with like no bells and whistles at all. And they started using it. And after using it for a while, and he kept adding little features to it here and there for things to tune it up, at a certain point in time, they were like, well, I bet other people want to use this. And they ran a Kickstarter in 2012. And that Kickstarter is what got things going. You know, it really just started with the three of them at first. And then, you know, over time, they brought in some contractors. Those contractors eventually became employees when it became a real company, and just kind of grew from there.
Oh. Amazing. That's
and
really,
like,
really cool.
2012 was like around about the time that 5e was coming out, right? So was that coinciding or was it planned?
The original game that they started off with that they were playing at the time was a 4e game. A lot of the founders are still really big fans of 4e. But yeah, 5e came out just after that. I think it was several years after the release of 5e that they ended up getting an official license. And that was like the first official license that Roll20 had, and kind of pivoted to being a company that interacted more directly with publishers.
Well, it really makes sense that a 4E game is what kind of led to the creation, because like in contrast to previous editions, 4E is a lot more tied to like battle maps. So you can't just like have a three-way phone call with your friends and do all theater of the mind with 4E as easily. So it makes sense. Yeah. You would need some sort of VTT situation in order to make that work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely. I think we should probably aim to have them on at some point, because to meet fans of 4E feels like collecting rare Pokemon cards at this point. And we've interviewed a lot of people on this show, and I feel like rarely do we get people like, oh yeah, 4E's the best!
Well, and to get them on the show, you will have to call them as if they are a Pokemon. Like, yes, Riley, I choose you.
There we go, boom, and then they're here. Okay, they appear inside the Zoom screen. That's awesome. Okay.
With their like cry and everything.
Yeah.
That sounds like kind of less Pokemon, maybe a bit more Bloody Mary.
Yeah,
like,
that's true, yeah. Yeah, yeah. We have to capture them first. That's the step we skipped. Yeah, if they are truly Pokemon, we'd have to track them down, these legendary Pokemon, and capture them and then bring them onto the show.
Yeah.
I've just sent them an email warning them of this plan.
Perfect, great. Yeah, there's three black halflings currently trying to find you. If you see one black guy in a trench coat, be wary.
It's actually three
in there. It's going to be us three. I'd love to just ask you guys about, like, starting with Roll20. Like, where did the journey begin for you guys? Did you start, you know, kind of working in the kind of jobs you are now, or you know, if you've been there for a while? Maybe a throw to you, Andrew, and then Morgan.
Yeah. So I have been a product manager for a long time in a lot of different industries. And a while ago, I made the choice of, like, I want to be a product manager, not of, like, banking things or insurance or healthcare things that are somewhat boring. And I want to do something fun, something that is in my wheelhouse and something that I know. And I didn't even think that there would be an opportunity for a product manager at a company like this. I actually did start at D&D Beyond and went through the Wizards acquisition, and then have recently started at Roll20 at the beginning of this year. And it aligns perfectly with what I want to do with the rest of my career, which is I want to use technology to make all role-playing games, all of them, easy to use. And that's for the rest of my career that I've kind of dedicated that, dedicated my career to doing that. So yeah, Roll20 lines with that perfectly, and I'm so excited to be doing it.
That's really cool. Well, congrats. That seems like a really awesome step to have taken so recently as well. That's awesome.
I got started in video games, actually, not in tabletop role-playing games. So I had been doing a bunch of software development in a bunch of capacities. The story about how I got into software development is also long and convoluted, but I was working at an R&D company and ended up getting a call from a recruiter out of the blue for Riot Games back in 2011. I worked at Riot for a good long time. It's where I kind of went through my management training and got into this pathway towards technology leadership, and also really got to first try my legs out running product on teams. And then I went from there, did a couple of other things. I worked with a small company called Seismic Games that contracted with a bunch of different companies, but I specifically worked with Disney Imagineering. That was a cool, fun project. Worked at Nexon amazing. For that's a while cool. and spun up a new studio with Nexon and brought a couple of games through their greenlight process. So just kind of a bunch of different places, weaving my way through the gaming industry. And then I got a call kind of out of the blue for someone looking for a leadership role at Roll20. I had an account for Roll20 that I hadn't touched in a while. I had just finally, after a couple year hiatus, just being way too heads down with work, had started to get back into TTRPG like maybe 3 or 4 years before that. And so that was super exciting. And I ended up kind of pivoting my life pretty big and you know, made a big move with my family out of the LA area when I came to Roll20. And it was a big pivot for me, but an exciting one. I also meant coming back to web development, which I hadn't done in over a decade at that point.
You should imagine that's like quite a bit different to like game development. It's a very different kind of like set of tools that you're working with. And I guess actually speaking of tools, maybe we could just jump in, talk a little bit about Roll20 for anyone who is listening who hasn't used Roll20. I mean, A, absolutely wild that you've played TTRPGs and not used Roll20 at some point. I feel like, there's nothing more enjoyable than getting a battle map when I'm doing a live stream and someone's got a battle map on Roll20. I'm like, yes.
Could you describe what the site is, I guess? And then because it doesn't just run D&D, it runs all sorts. In fact, I think we used it for the Quiet Year on our show before. Could you describe, kind of, if somebody's not familiar with the term VTT with Roll20, could you describe what it is, and then like some of the changes that you've been undergoing fairly recently?
I can define it in a couple of ways. One is sort of the what you might understand it to be, and then how we see it. And then we can kind of talk about from there. So VTT means virtual tabletop, and it is just that. It is your tabletop that you would normally play on, but in a virtual realm. So that way, the general idea there is anything that is available for you on your tabletop while you play in person together is available in a virtual tabletop there as well. And that actually really brings up, most people think of maps when they think of a VTT, like, oh, a VTT has maps. Not everybody plays with maps. And in fact, a lot of people use our tool in very different ways. For example, the Quiet Year is a sort of map making game together that you can play on Roll20 out of the box. You can also, I've played games where I didn't even touch the map feature, but we used character sheets, dice rolling, chats.
I think actually we did that for Harlem Unbound because none of us had played the game before. And so the GM was introducing us all. And so we basically got given like character sheets and stuff like on Roll20. And, you know, it was easy for them to talk through it because, again, like all of the stuff was on there and we could all see the same, you know, we all knew we were looking at the same thing. You know, it wasn't like there was no chance that someone clicked on the wrong link and opened up the wrong thing. You know what I mean? Yeah. So made it a lot easier for sure.
Yeah. So the way we see it, we see what is Roll20, specifically the VTT on Roll20, because there's lots of aspects of the larger company that we can get into. But specifically, what is the VTT on Roll20? What does it represent to us? And that is creating a game, a place to play your game shared and a shared experience around that. We need a virtual space to be able to do that. It is very difficult for us to just play over a video conference because it's hard for us to share and to see other people's things. At a table, you really do, that table binds everybody together. And that is exactly what we want to do as well, is we want to create a space that binds people together, allows them to play, and gives them the tools that does that. And at the moment, that does really, really well with maps. There's a lot of tools there for maps. But in the future, we want other ways that allow people to, just like they would at the table, give them tools to play a number of different games that are played very, very differently, so that that way you can best utilize that space in new and interesting ways. That's what we hope it will be. Yeah.
And to that point about supporting other game systems, you know, we've got a bunch of, you know, games that don't even use character sheets, like The Quiet Year is an example, Fiasco.
For the Queen.
For the Queen.
We played that
with
Abria a few years ago.
Yeah, we did. Yeah.
But then, you know, of those, you know, other TTRPG systems that use it, I think we have just around 1,200 different character sheets on the system, including ones we've built and then community contributed character sheets.
That's so amazing.
So these are like pre-gen that a person could use.
Not necessarily pre-gens, but they're character sheets that you can load in that you can select when you create a game.
Oh,
yeah.
That's really cool. Really
awesome. I recently ran a Cyberpunk Red session on Roll20, and it was really useful for people who, because like when you're creating a character for the first time in a new system, it's quite overwhelming. But like when you have the tools there in front of you, it really helps, like having the character sheet and like being able to fill it in and know that it's going to be, it's right. So yeah, it's a really helpful tool.
Sure. And definitely feel like from an accessibility point of view, it's pretty amazing. Like especially like if you're learning a new system, it can feel super overwhelming. So having the kind of resource which lays everything out very kind of cleanly in terms of like all the bits that you'll need, you know, for the game, that way you don't sort of have to worry about having missed anything. I think like that kind of thing makes it really, really, really useful and very accessible, which is great.
Yeah.
How many different systems do you have available on Roll20?
So as Morgan was saying, we've got about 1,200 character sheets. Those are free and available. You create an account, you jump in, you can create a game with any one of those things. There are lots and lots of publishers that we have and lots of content. I actually don't even have a count of the number of publishers that we work with and then game system as a part of that, because there's lots of publishers that make content for different games and things like that. But there is a number of content. And so the way that works for a user is I can start up a game for free. I can choose a character sheet of any of the 1,200 games that I want to play. And then I can jump in with that character sheet and just start going. The content comes in a compendium and allows me to sort of drag those options in. So some of the more popular games like D&D, you don't have to like write in your spell. You can actually just pull it and add it to your character sheet really easily.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's not exactly like a one-to-one relationship between sheets and game systems. So, you know, we have our official D&D 5e sheet. There are a couple of different community built sheets for 5e that focus on different things. But, you know, and so it's hard to get an exact number. It is less than 1,200, but probably more than 600.
Wow. So basically, really cool. If it's a well-known TTRPG, odds are you could play it on Roll20.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, like, that's amazing.
Oh, I think it's cool. Just such an amazing resource for the community as well, for people who are building, you know, who are building these CTRPGs and looking for a platform for them. You know, it's kind of like, yeah, it's like the absolutely best of both worlds, because, you know, you don't have to, you know, suddenly pay for a ton of shipping and do you know what I mean? Like all of this kind of stuff for any kind of physical elements to them. I feel like, it, again, just from an accessibility point, but from the creator point of view as well, that seems like a really awesome sort of part of it.
And one of the things that I've talked with some publishers and writers about, and I think is super exciting about the future, and this is a what if scenario. There's no commitments here on Roll20's part, but just an idea that I think is really interesting. Right now, the process of creating a role-playing game starts with writing a book. But that's really difficult, because that's a book is very expensive and can be very, very hard to release.
True.
If we can lower the barrier to creating a role-playing game on digital systems like Roll20, you could actually flop that and say, I want to create the game first in a digital way, get that play tested really easily with people without having a whole lot of barrier to entry, and then drum up support for your game and then eventually produce the book that you need to produce. And I think that could be a stellar way for especially indie game creators to test out their game, build an audience, and get support. I think that'd be cool.
That's one of the things that I think I love most here, and I think is a big part of the DNA of the company that I really love, is that, you know, it's really always been about community content creators facilitating people getting in and creating in the industry. That's one of the reasons why we were so excited about joining together with, you know, with One Bookshelf, because DriveThruRPG also provides so many great tools for people to get started. And it's really just kind of about, it is really hard to get started in the TTRPG publishing space. And there's a lot of upfront costs. And I think the more that we can think about, how we lower the barrier to entry, how we let games get in and really kind of succeed based on their merits and not based on how much capital you're able to bring to it, I think that's a success for us, I think.
Liv, you were going to say something?
Yeah,
I was going to ask. So, I mean, it's a time we don't look back on fondly, but it must have been quite big for you during COVID. I wondered how that was for you, because like I imagine business was booming. I know that you only joined like fairly recently, I guess, on Roll20, but do you have any kind of insight as to how that was for the company?
Yeah, so I joined in 2020, January of 2020, so just barely before.
Okay. I see.
There had been some pitches and some work in progress going on some infrastructure modernization, but it really hadn't gotten very far. And so one of the first things that I was trying to tackle when I started was getting those projects booted up and going. So, you know, the story we like to tell is because this company started very from the ground up, from something very small, and has always sort of grown faster than it really meant to. When I started, there were two servers, and we had to wait until we had to wait until it was a low traffic time and bring one server down and put a patch onto it when we had changes to push, and then bring it back up and bring the other one down and put the patch on it. And that, you know, obviously wasn't going to work going into the future. It was already starting to not really suit the company's needs. And we're putting all of this into place, getting ready to start moving towards auto scaling and all of these kind of like modern infrastructure things to make it more scalable and performant when like we were under peak. And then there was one day we got an alert from our automated system that was flagging as a potential DDoS attack. Like, oh no. Oh, wow. We go in and there's just like twice. It's an off peak time. It's it was peak time in Europe, but we hadn't crunched the numbers on that in our heads yet. And we were showing it something like twice the traffic that we normally did during this time. We're like, what's going on?
What's happening?
And we dig into the numbers and all of this inflated traffic is coming from Italy. Mm-hmm. And we're like, oh, Italy just went on lockdown.
Wow.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Of course. No way. They were the first ones, right?
And we looked at that and we looked at the last announcements from the CDC. And we're like, oh, God, we've got like 2 weeks. We've got like two weeks to prepare.
That's terrifying as well, because I can imagine the situation where you're sat there going, wow, Europe's really popping off. Wait, Italy? It's just Italy? Oh my god.
Possible correlation could there be?
Oh no.
Yeah, it's like that moment in the horror movie where, like, you're standing on the beach and you're seeing like big waves lapping up, and like the scientist character is getting really fascinated by the wave, and then someone taps them and points on the horizon and there's a tsunami coming.
Like that scene in Interstellar where they're like, what is that? Is those mountains? And they're like, that's not a mountain. It's a wave.
That was Italy. That was Italy on Roll 20.
For context there too, like Italy is today a very small fraction of our actual traffic.
What I mean. I can imagine for, you know, it's just like, that's what I mean. Yeah, see, that's what I mean. I'm just seeing the idea that being like, oh, it's a whole continent's popping off. Wait, no. Like, so, wow, yeah.
2020 was a wild year. I mean, and some of our key infrastructure devs worked a lot of overtime, just kind of sitting there with a roll of duct tape, just, you know, plugging holes in the dam as they burst, Bugs Bunny style. But, you know, by around the summer of 2020, we had the infrastructure in a really good and solid state. And then we could start trying to go on and modernize, you know, some more fun and more player facing things.
Yeah. I think that was a few companies. I think I can only imagine what happened at Zoom HQ at the beginning of lockdown.
Right.
I'd love to have been in that board meeting when they're like, wait guys, they're all using Zoom, no one's using Skype. I don't know why, but they're all coming to us.
No one knows why.
No one knows why.
Skype, and I think we've said this on the show before, to this day I'm not sure how Skype lost that. Skype had their name verbed. No. Like you would say, Skype me.
Skype something.
And they still lost. Like people don't even say Zoom me. I don't get it. Yeah, I don't know how they lost that.
I still say Skype, which is crazy.
Yeah.
Wild.
I wanted to ask wanted to hone in on one thing you mentioned, which is something I didn't realize was an option on Roll 20. So let me get this straight. If an indie developer is like, oh, I really want my game to be playable on Roll 20, would they be able then to create essentially the means for doing so and essentially have their game as a playable thing on the site?
Yeah, definitely. So there's a self-serve version of it. You know, there's a learning curve to it. It's not the easiest thing to get your head around. But there are also a lot of, you know, independent character sheet developers who will, you know, do it as a service. There are, you know, a couple of companies that focus on converting content to that indie publishers can work with. Or if they have someone in-house who knows the system or is interested in learning the system, they can get the character sheet stood up. They have access to all the tools that we've used for our bigger sheets in terms of, you know, automating things and connecting it to data and, you know, auto calculating and character building and all of that stuff. And then our content team has a couple people who are dedicated to supporting publishers who are coming through who want to build compendium content. And compendium is what we call like our digitized version of the books. So if you want to, you know, have your player's handbook in there and have, you know, a digitized, like encoded version of all of the data that can be used as a data source for dragging and dropping to the sheet
So it's like an interactive, like version basically.
Yeah. So for example, we use that data for the D&D 5e sheet. You can run through a character builder process step by step because it's all in kind of like a data format that's consumable. For the Pathfinder 2e sheet, you can drag and drop, or this is coming out soon, you drag and drop an ancestry onto the sheet and it'll have a pop-up window and you can make all the subsequent choices that come from choosing an ancestry. And so, you
that's
know,
very cool.
So sheet creators can take advantage of all that stuff to build it. And then, you know, we've got a thing people can sign up to become marketplace creators and sell modules or, you know, expansions and things like that as well. And then, you know, over on the drive-through side, they've got like print on demand. If you don't want to do like a big print run of a book, that's got actually really good quality. I know Worlds Without Number used it and a couple of other Ironsworn, I think.
Very cool.
So like lots of tools for getting up and started. And then, you know, we're still a ways out. I again, can't make commitments right now, but we do have a new character sheet system in the works right now, which is, I wouldn't say that it is easier, but it's more understandable to someone who's familiar with web development. It's much more powerful. Mm. You can do a lot more with it. And then it actually gets some kind of API access to the character sheets that lets you do things like, you know, enter something in the initiative tracker, change the token that's being used for a character, things like that. Okay. And that's an internal testing right now. We're probably going to get a couple of sheets under our belt on our own that we'll have built on it before we start getting that to user release. But that's probably coming soon. And we're hoping that that really opens up options for people who want to have more robust sheets.
Mm. Mm-hmm. And what is exactly the relationship between Roll20 and DriveThruRPG, just for clarity? Mm.
I was going to ask, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So we've come together. We're now one company. So and all of our teams are like intermixed and interwoven now. You know, Mike Todd, who is a CTO over there at One Bookshelf, is now you know, running a couple of our teams over here that are more related to that, you know, content area. It was like, that's just one example. We're all kind of intermixing at this point.
We have joined forces together.
Yes.
Yeah, nice.
By your powers combined.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just hoping that we can get to a point where we verb roll 20. Like, roll 20 is the verb for like tabletop.
I'm gonna roll 20.
Let's roll 20 to get. Yeah, that's roll. Yeah,
I think I have 20? Used that, honestly. I think I have done that.
I mean, to be fair, it kind of is synonymous in the sense that, like, if anyone says, like, you know, oh, we'll use maps, whatever, online, my immediate thing is like, I'm like, oh, we're using roll 20. Like, that,
yeah, exactly.
Like, that's my assumption. It's like, we're going to use roll 20. Yeah.
Well, it could even be very like flattering. A nickname or something. It could be like Jeremy roll 20. Whatever, you know.
Yeah. You can pick it as a nickname. You know what I mean?
And then, there you go.
You know. Yeah. I think you should permanently change your name to Jeremy Roll 20.
I think that's about right.
Yeah, I think that's.
I was going to ask. So I believe there is a brand new system. Well, toolbar. You've said that's come to Roll 20. Can you tell us more about it?
Yeah, actually, we just released it. We've been talking about it for a while. And we said it will be out by the end of May. And guess what? Today is the last day of May. With a few hours to spare.
Like Indiana Jones grabbing his hat. Just right at the last minute.
That was the 31st of May. Just whap, got it. It's fine.
It's the suspense, you know. You got to keep up that suspense.
Yeah. Keep guessing, yeah.
Yeah, it's so it really does mark the start of us redesigning the entire VTT from the ground up. We don't know how long that'll take. We don't know all of the pieces of that, but it is us starting to rethink how our VTT works. We're going to build on top of what we have. That's why we released the new toolbar the way we did. It is opt-in, so you don't have to use it if you don't want to for now. The whole point here is to create a dialogue with our users. We can't make something simple by just sitting in a room and clacking away and then delivering it. We gotta kind of, it's a yes and process, right? We gotta do a thing and then see what you say. Oh, okay. I see what the problems are. I didn't see it before, and I see it from your perspective. Let's change that. And through that sort of yes and process, we are going to go through each part of our VTT, redesigning it and making it new with a real focus on ease of use. Making it easier for you to tell your story, which is ultimately the real reason why we're doing this whole thing. When a digital tool is really complicated, it ends up feeling like you're playing the VTT and not playing the game, right? It ends up playing, it feels like I'm playing here on my computer screen and not playing the game in my mind, in my imagination. Yeah. And that's what we really want to try to do, is we want you to be able to play the game easy in your mind. And we just want the tools to make it really easy for you to play in your mind and in your imagination.
You almost want to forget that you're using a VTT.
Right, yeah.
Exactly. Mm. Yeah. The things that you remember are the story moments, the friends that you have around the table, the characters that you've created and the stories that you told together, not that time it was really, really hard to get your character into the initiative role.
Yeah.
Right? Like, we don't want you to remember that. We want you to remember the stories that you're telling.
Yeah, because being honest with ourselves, you know, there are things that are really great about how long we've been around. We've got some name brand recognition. We have all of these established relationships with publishers. We kind of understand what it takes for us to be kind of good neighbors in the community and all these things that you get with spending time in the space. But also our UI was really easy to use in 2013, 2014. And then we added features and added features and added features and added features. And now not only is it super complicated and hard to learn, it also feels like it was built in, you know, 2013. And it was absolutely great for when it was there. But now we need to start thinking about how do we take all of these features that we've got and, one, get them out of your way when you don't need them so that you can just get in and understand what it is that you need to do. And then how do we make them discoverable and intuitive when you do want to engage with them?
I wonder how that audience feedback kind of process works. You know, you said it's sort of almost like a yes and situation, and I'm just sort of interested because it must be such a tricky thing because you're essentially working in a space that like isn't really occupied. You know what I mean? It's not like there's a bigger, larger thing doing what you guys are doing. Like you're at the kind of like, you know, top level doing this. And I'm just sort of interested, like, how do you go about gathering that kind of feedback from people? You know, is it just sort of a lot of internal testing, or, you know, do you kind of go out and ask people, you know, what features they're using, what features they're not using? And I guess like what how do you kind of profile individual like tools and things like and whether they're like a net gain or, you know, or not, sort of thing?
Yeah. Well, we just like you would do in your game, we're going to get everybody into one instance of Roll20, just all thousands and thousands of people. And then we're just going to ask. No, I'm just kidding. We're not going to do that at all.
One call.
Do it. I believe you.
We've got a couple of questions. I know it's hard to hear me all the way at the back, but
you're going to pick somebody's game at random and just shuffle everyone in.
Okay, no. Italy's having some connection issues. We're just going to throw to Italy real quick. Hold on.
Yeah. Everyone stop raising your hand. Stop.
Everyone. Who is drawing the penis, please? If you could not, that would be great. If you could just not draw that, that would be
immediately
fantastic.
Thousands of penises start appearing across the map.
I know.
The way we're actually doing it is a lot of different ways. Because ultimately we want to hear feedback from our customers, our users, in the way that they feel comfortable giving that feedback. And so we're really going more to where they are. We're giving them some ways that they can come to us and give us feedback, but we're going to all those places too. So we're listening, we're hearing those things. We might not always respond, but we're going and we're listening in those places because we want to be able to make that better. A couple of examples. We've actually held over the last month, I have done around 30 or so different demos of the toolbar to small groups of people.
Wow.
Usually around 10, most 15. We also did a live Q&A session with a lot more than that. So that was how we did it first. That's initially. Let me step back a whole lot more.
Yeah.
Because last year, we actually did a ton of user research that our design team did. And that was in the form of like, what do we think this could look like? We threw it out into some surveys and we did some user testing. They would actually use a prototype that we would generate, and then we'd see how they would, and we'd trash that and start a different one.
Yeah.
Does this work?
It actually started even lower level with that, with some initial surveys, just getting people to answer like what things did they struggle with? And then we started getting people in for testing rounds with the existing UI and gave them a series tasks. And we started off by looking at like, what are the tasks that people are frequently either failing at or take a really long time to accomplish? And that was a big target area. And then from there we started to do our initial takes at what we thought could solve that problem and put those to the same rounds of testing. And then our design team sets a really high threshold for, they have to have, you know, this level of misclick rate. It's below a certain threshold misclick rate. The time to complete tasks needs to be below a certain level before the designs get approved.
And through some of those tests, we saw some huge improvements. The last thing I'll mention too is today, now that it is out, you can opt in and there is a feedback button right there. You can go right on there. Ooh. There's a form and you can fill that out. I read that all personally. Me and actually our designers read that every day. And we're going through organizing it. We even respond sometimes. We might even engage like, hey, do you have trouble with this or that? Or mm-hmm. what if we did something like this? Would that work? Or so it's a whole conversation. It's multi-threaded with a lot of people.
And so you will know now if somebody writes, hi, Andrew, on there, then they've listened to this. And then
everybody listening to this, respond in with a hi, Andrew. And then
hi, Andrew.
What's up?
That's very funny.
And in terms of things outside of the VTT UI rework, we've got a bunch of other channels too. You know, we have people who do our social media, and they're always out there kind of listening for what people are complaining about, what people are suggesting, and bringing those back to the team. And we get those put in and prioritized against other things. We have our suggestion and idea forum on our website. And, I think being very honest, that was something that didn't get addressed for a really long time. It wasn't until towards the end of 2021 that we really got the infrastructure in a better place that we could start picking up some of those big things. Last year, we cleared out 5 of the top 10 items from the suggestion and idea forum. And we're continuing to dig through on that this year. And then again, capturing things from online, things that are suggested elsewhere, a lot of different channels.
This HeadGum Podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers, aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, wow.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt.
Mm-hmm.
So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
I think it's just such an important part of having anything kind of like online at the moment. Like, you know, like just reducing the amount of like time and attention that it takes for people to like get to something or make something happen.
Yeah.
Like that ease of use is like king right now, you know? There's so many times where I can think like, I've been so pumped about like using a website or using, you know, like there's a couple of like world building platforms and things that I've tried to use. Mm. And the second it takes me like too many clicks to get through to something or doesn't make sense, I'm like, I'm out. Like, I think that's why I kind of asked the question about how you gather that feedback. Cause I think it's such a, that's like the gold dust. It kind of feels like is like, how do you really make it as kind of easy to use? Not only so that, you know, you can bring more people in and you can make it a more welcoming space for everyone, but also so that you can actually just hold people in the space and be like, no, this is the, like the place to come and use, you know, like use a VTT or, you know, have your character sheets or, you know, whatever else it is. And I think it's, you know, it's super positive, honestly, to like hear how much you take that on board. Like clearing, you know, I don't know many companies that would, you know, go as far to like clearing as that many items off of the most frequently asked for thing. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I feel like I can think of a lot of websites and things that I use where I'm like, I'm pretty sure we've been asking for this since 2010. You know what I mean? And we're still here and it's not been fixed. So
we have those items too.
We have those too, you know, being honest.
Yeah. Well, you'll hear about it in my feedback form. It will be specifically addressed to you, and I'll say, "Hey, I've been asking for this since 2008, and I know you guys went around then.
It keeps going back.
I've been asking,
which is why it's frankly ridiculous it hasn't been sorted yet because I've been asking for such a long time.
That's
I wanted to ask. And we talk a lot about inclusivity, and we've been talking a lot about accessibility in this interview. With a VTT, I would imagine that there are steps that one must take for people with disabilities, such as people who maybe have vision impairments and things like that, or maybe issues with maybe like sensitivity to lighting or different stimuli, maybe in some cases of dyslexia where things can be very difficult to read and things and any number of disabilities that could affect someone's use of a VTT like this. What steps is slash has or rather has slash is Roll20 taking to address and accommodate those people and make the site more accessible for those people?
Yeah, I mean, we are, you know, we're an older website and there's a lot of gap to make up for in those areas for sure. It's especially hard with some of the older parts of the user interface that are, you know, not really built with modern standards in mind. And so even fixing and making modest tweaks to them is a pretty cumbersome process. So, you know, we do test our color schemes and our color palettes against those types of checkers. We have the fonts that we have for the main user interface have been, you know, tested and approved for accessibility purposes. It's a threshold I think we're much better at hitting for the pieces of new UI that we're putting in. So, for example, the new toolbar that Andrew's team just put out is built on top of an existing framework that already has a lot of accessibility tooling in place, and then, you know, is built against those color schemes that have already been tested and vetted. We've definitely made some changes in the last little bit. We actually have a big round of revisions coming to the main logged out parts of the website in the next few months to try to address different, you know, vision impaired and other processing impairment use cases. But yeah, it's something that we take very seriously, especially for the new UI that we're putting together, but it's also a journey and we are still figuring out what our pathway forward is for some of the areas of the website that are a little bit harder to get at.
I would also say too, Morgan's saying there that we can do better, and we absolutely can. One of the ways that we are trying to do that is by providing ways for people that have those issues to let us know. So the feedback becomes even more important in this case, because while there are certain standards that we can follow that will help accommodate a lot of people, there are still lots of intricacies that are even not included in standards. So understanding and seeing, having empathy for people that are in that situation is really important and it's difficult to do without knowing. So if you have that, if you have those issues, we want to hear from you. In fact, I would even say, I want to talk directly to you. Let's see how it works for you. And, I want to sort of step in your shoes. If you have shoes.
I think this is something that comes up quite a lot, like when it comes to accessibility, which is, you know, I think we've spoken to this point before on the show, which is like, you know, like as hard as difficult as it can be sometimes, you know, someone has to kind of be first in like flagging an issue, because, you know, it's so hard. I think, you know, when you're working within a limited team, there's only so many people that you can hire, you know what I mean? Sure. And you're never going to cover all of the bases internally. And so therefore you do have to go externally. And one thing that we always try to encourage is that, like, you know, we really want people to be kind of like bastions for people like themselves and to put themselves forward to, you know, so that people like yourselves can, you know, make those adjustments. And so I think it's like, yeah, definitely. Like, if someone's listening to this and you do have a very particular, a blocker or something that, like, is difficult for you, like, definitely feedback to companies like, you know, Roll20, because I think it will make it only helps, it only serves to make the whole space more accessible for everyone, which I think is a huge positive. So,
yeah, I assume that the feedback option that you mentioned previously would be the best way to get in touch, just so people are aware.
Yeah, especially immediately. Yeah. But like cool. I said, all the places that you feel comfortable leaving feedback are the places that we're going to watch too. So it's it's not one road to hear to us listening. It is many, and we're trying to take it on ourselves to do that.
Out of curiosity,
I was going to ask if I could.
I wanted to ask, are as part of that initiative, because I think it's absolutely awesome that you all are looking to change that, because it's something that's important.
For sure.
As part of that initiative, are you also interested, or are you in the process of hiring people of those backgrounds who might be able to help guide some of those features?
We really should. you know, I think we've got a lot of very specific things that we do with our hiring process to try to make it accessible to a diverse number of candidates. You know, I think, being honest, that is not something we have specifically put effort into trying to hire around. We do work with some consulting companies that specialize in that, that do have members of staff with different processing disabilities. But that is not something that we specifically hired for. You know, I think to the point that you raised earlier, it is challenging. We're still a pretty small company and we still have a pretty small staff. Yeah, sure. And so it's that kind of question of, you know, we need to hire for specific skill sets, and it can that can already be a very daunting task. But no, I think that's an excellent point. I think that that's something that we could attend to more.
If you are a developer that can develop on technologies that we use, and you have accessibility issues that you often deal with, let us know. Like, reach out to us. I'd love to talk with you.
Come on, gang, shoot your shot. Roll 20, maybe.
I think it's, you know, Morgan, I completely appreciate, because I think that you know, it can be extremely difficult when you're working within a small company to flag all of that, because also you have to kind of have the trade-off of, like, we need the absolute, like, best person that we can get for this job so that we can actually like, you know, implement those changes that will affect, you know, all of these people. And I think that it, you know, it can be a really expensive process as well, like headhunting and trying to go out and find people. And, you know, that part of it is something that I think people often, like, overlook, is just, like, how much it actually costs to, like, do a big, you know, hiring, you know, drive and all of that kind of stuff. It is definitely, definitely a lot.
I totally agree. Although I think that there are still things that companies can do. I mean, posting your job listings in places where individuals were already congregating from you know, marginalized groups is really critically important. Being earnestly willing to hire people who are, you know, true juniors with limited experience in a field is also really critical, especially when you're working against the backdrops of fields that already have a lot of, you know, bias in play. So, you know, I agree with you, but I think that there are things that companies can and should be doing to at least make it more possible.
Absolutely. And absolutely. I really appreciate you saying, like, being, you know, honest about that, and the fact that you guys can do better. Because I think, again, a lot of companies very much aren't open and honest about that. They'll sort of say, oh, no, we're doing loads. We're doing great. It's fine. It's all fine. Don't look under the carpet. Yeah.
Frank response. Very much appreciated.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can I ask as well? So as somebody who's used Roll20 and kind of, like, learned to, like, use it kind of by trial and error. Do you have any kind of like resources or any just advice for anyone who's looking to kind of like GM on it for the first time? Or I mean, GMing is where kind of like I was most daunted, I think, because like usually my GM will be like, okay, and then you do this, and then like spoon feeding me how to do it. So like, yeah, any resources particularly for the GM maybe?
And we do have help articles that will help you understand exactly like what does a thing do. Sometimes that can be like a whole manual and you don't want to read a whole manual. There's a few things in the product that we're going to try to start doing more of. We have some of them. Tours, things that will show you how to do a certain thing. We also have a tutorial that you can join. So instead of creating your own game, you can actually create a tutorial game that will kind of walk you through the basics of the initial setup. And then you can always, there is a ton of people that make content around Roll20 and show you how to do something in Roll20. They would appreciate the views and the comments and the audience. So those people make really easy to digest comments. And then finally, on our forums, we have a load of people that are super passionate about Roll20 and are immediately ready to help you do what you need to do for game prep. The response times on that are bonkers sometimes. So there's lots of help. There's lots of help. But I will say too, Liv, that we could probably do better. That's one of the big things that I'm trying to focus on with the new redesign is it should be intuitive. You shouldn't have to like think about how it actually works. It should be like, oh, okay, that makes sense. I would do it that way. And it is sort of in the first one or two places. That's what we characterize as the misclick. Right.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I will also forever shout out Nick Olivo's video series on YouTube. He's got tutorials that for Roll20 in particular that range from, you know, the very basic, this is how to get started, to very advanced, like how to work with, you know, advanced macros and add-ons and extensions and all kinds of different things. So that's a good place to get started.
Mm. Awesome. Very cool. What was the name again?
Nick Olivo.
Nick Olivo. Okay.
Is it spelled O-L-I-V-O?
I believe so, yes.
Okay.
Okay. I was like, that's my name, your spelling. That is my name.
Liv's alter ego.
It's me. I'm not the whole time. Ta-da.
I wanted to...
Oh, go ahead, Jesper, sorry.
No, I was going to pivot hard into something a bit more fun, so please feel free.
I was going to ask about... You know what? My question ran away from me. Jasper, please.
I'm so sorry.
While I chase this little sucker.
Also, Jasper, this isn't fun for you. Yeah. You don't want to learn how to do it? Oh my God, I can't believe you.
No, I was just going to ask if you have a favorite TTRPG to play on Roll20 that's maybe not like D&D. Ooh. Like if there's any other games that you're like, ooh, this is like particularly fun on Roll20 and people should go and check it out and play it.
Okay, fair play, Jasper. That's quite fun. So yeah, no.
Thanks.
So we've been asked this one before, and one of our answers is the same. But go ahead.
Ooh, okay.
So to be clear, you're asking what's our favorite game to play on Roll20?
Yes, specifically like to play on Roll20. Yeah.
So I actually recently, Morgan, this changed.
Recently,
whoa, I played spicy. A game of I played a game of Blades in the Dark. on Roll20.
Yes.
And
I love it.
Roll20 does so Blades in the Dark is very theater of the mind. There's very few actual like dungeons and like a lot of tactical decision making is not a part of it in that regard. It is a lot more sort of do the job than downtime but Roll20 Roll20 has a lot of tools that make a lot of those activities really, really easy for everybody to kind of create together. So you can have a crew sheet that everybody can use and interact with and modify. You can also have multiple screens that will show the sort of scene that you're running or the map of the city or the options that you might have or the sort of the actions that you can take during downtime and stuff like that. Mm. And I was very enthralled with how they use a primarily map dominated VTT to make it playable without actually having maps. And I thought that was really, really cool. And those are the things in my mind that I want to try to make easier to do. Right.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Can I ask about just clearly blaze in the dark. So I don't know if this is how you do it for everyone. I'm playing campaign right now, and you have to like make a clock, and then you have to fill that in as you go along when you're doing downtime mm-hmm. stuff. Is there like a clock system, or is it just kind of like...
We have tokens, and they're called like rollable tables. But essentially mm-hmm. what that allows you to do is take one token and switch mm-hmm. the image of it with any number of other images. DM has, I think it comes with the package as you do it, but I'm not certain because the DM had it all set up for me when I got there. But essentially it is that little circle clock, and then you can flip the token to where as it counts down really
easily. Mm-hmm. Oh, so cool, because we have to like try and fill it in ourselves and it gets really messy. Mm. Yes, sorry.
Yeah, there are clocks on the character sheet too. And then if for people who are subscribers, we have these extension scripts you can use if you're a subscriber. There's a Blades in the Dark extension script that the GM can invoke and can take any clock off of somebody's character sheet. Have it get placed onto the virtual tabletop. So, and then you can do that with people's stress and their wound tracker too. Oh. So it's really great for like intense moments where like somebody's spending stress near the dial. It's a really intense scene. There's like two competing clocks and like they're wounded, and you can like highlight what's going on for that character and just drop all those things on the screen so everybody can be watching their like stress ticking up closer to the to the trauma threshold.
Amazing.
That's so fun. We need to talk about Blades in the Dark on the show because it's very good. But
So Blades in the Dark is the game I've played the most on Roll20 by far. Mm-hmm. I've also played a lot of Fantasy Flight games. They've got the, you know, those really interesting custom dice that are really awesome for having narrative moments, surprising narrative moments come out of your dice rolls, but they're really hard to track in person. So that's again with a mod script, the Fantasy Flight stuff. So like FFG Star Wars or their Genesis system, suddenly streamlines all of the complexities of those dice. So you can really just get like what's cool about them without what's complex about them. And so you get things with those dice like, I might fail on a roll in a way that causes that then also passes this bonus pool on, and I can pass that bonus on to the next person after me. And so you set up these situations where, you know, you're flying through, you miss a shot, something really bad happens to your ship, but the person after you is going to nail the shot because they get 5 extra bonus dice in their pool.
Oh, fun.
And like these just so, you know, how do you describe that narratively? Oh, like I collided with the thing and spun off, but it creates an opening for you in some compelling way. It's just
like collaboratively failing forward.
It's just really cool. Yeah. I have a game that I want to play on the VTT on Unroll 20, but I haven't had a chance to yet. And they won't have a character sheet until they do their next release after the Kickstarter. But I told you my first TTRPG was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and Other Strangeness. You know, something like that just got so much nostalgia for me. And Julian Kay's Mutants in the Now is like my white whale game. It like feels just enough like those old mutant animal games to hit the nostalgia, but it's like modern game mechanics. And I can't wait till there's a Roll20 sheet because I definitely want to play that.
Amazing.
I had two questions, that both of which are fun. The fun question.
I really feel like this said this came out, and I didn't mean it like fun. I don't know what I meant. I was just
having
like,
fun, Jasper. Okay.
That's what I meant. Nothing but frowns. Was also fun. As soon as I said it, I was like, I hope no one picks up on this, and now we're referencing it again.
All the laughs were added in post. The first fun question is I love to play music during my games, and as of right now I'm unaware of any feature on Roll20 that allows me to like, hey everyone, we're in this game, I'm going to pump through some music. Are there plans for that to be an option, both for I guess royalty free music, but also like if I find some music on YouTube or something like that to pump that through while playing on Roll20?
Jeremy, there is music on Roll20. I can answer that when I'm not even a part of the team. It's very fun and very useful. Ooh. Yeah, sorry, Morgan, Andrew.
There is music. We call it the jukebox. You can access it, and then you can choose a lot of different sort of types of sound. It's not as elaborate as you might find in some soundboards out there specifically designed for gaming, but it works in connecting with the maps. So when you join a certain map, you can have a certain set of sounds play, and you can loop them through, and you can kind of overlay some ambient sounds.
You can upload you can upload custom sounds to it as well, but you can't connect it to things like YouTube right now. There's definitely a lot of quality of life that could be added on that. It's a little bit tough to figure out, and the UI is definitely one of those pieces that really needs a revamp. But it's there. The sounds work great, and like Andrew said, you can connect a playlist to a map so that you know. The person who ran the FFG Star Wars game I played in, you know, you'd come to like a space map and for a battle scene, and it would immediately be like some big grand, you know, Star Wars piece that he downloaded.
That's cool.
Very fun.
So you could upload,
but there's room for improvement for sure.
Oh, that's so cool. So you can upload music and sounds and stuff from other
sources. Right, if you own the file. That's right. Yeah. Okay. There's also, if you're a pro user, there's also API scripts that allow you to connect those to certain die rolls or certain other actions in there too.
Whoa,
very cool. Yeah,
that's
like sometimes cool. We'll have a DM that will go pew 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 pew, like when you're shooting lasers at some people and stuff like that. So it'll be fun.
That's amazing.
That's I did that for the first time. Like used like a soundscape for like an in-person D&D game recently, and I described like a crack of thunder as there was one, and the table lost their minds, and I felt like God.
Yes.
Yeah,
it was great.
Did you time it that way, or did it just happen?
No. I timed it like I had like I had my finger on the space, like the space bar as I was describing the scene, and I hit it, and I was like, and there was a crack of thunder, and I was like, and I was like, yeah,
next level shit. Yeah. Like, and congratulations,
that felt pretty cool. I'll be honest.
And you hear this.
Exactly. Stuff like that. Yeah. I did it.
When I was GMing Cyberpunk the other week, I was very happy to find like a cyber like club, but also had like the sound of like clinking glasses and stuff like that. And I was like, this is so specific. Oh my God. Yeah. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Or when a token reaches 0 hit points, you can have a Wilhelm scream.
That's exactly.
The other question I had, which is also fun, Morgan, you mentioned a Kickstarter.
Roll20 isn't running any Kickstarters right now. Nothing that we're looking to do with that. But Roll20 did start with a Kickstarter back in 2012, 2013. Yes. The Kickstarter that I plugged a second ago was for an expansion to Mutants in the Now. I think that one's already closed. Oh man, do I have some good ones to plug right now? I don't know. Just plug my favorite publishers.
Well, what I can ask you, this is not a Kickstarter thing, but I just wondered what the future of Roll20 was going to look at. Like, I'm realizing that this is completely different to what Jeremy asked.
Grab the wheel and swerve. That's a good question. Grab that wheel and swerve.
Good at segues. It surprises me, honestly. But what's the future of Roll20 looking like?
Well, that is a large question and is something that we can only hypothesize about what it might be. But it is important to have some centralized thought around it. And by Roll20, I'm going to specifically narrow down in on what do we want the VTT to do and be and grow into? Because there's lots of other aspects of Roll20 that you'll see as we go. But the biggest things that I can say is I want, just like we've been talking about, I want the VTT, and I what I hear from customers a lot of times is they're looking for ways to tell better stories. They're looking for storytelling tools, not map creation tools always, right? Mm-hmm. We have lots of map creation tools, and there's lots of ways that you can and play on a map, and that is a large portion of it, and will always be, because that's the table. You put the map on the table. But there is so many other ways that we can use the space that we have to tell better stories. And that's some of the things that I really want to start looking into and seeing. And the cool thing that happens there, and I've seen it happen time and time again with digital tools entering into role-playing games, they change the way we play the game, right? They change, they give us new options. They invert what we could do. And even in the new games that are starting to be created now, you can start to see the fingerprints of this, where they start to understand like, well, this will be in a digital tool. This will be more easy to do. I bet I can make this new mechanic work better now that I know that it will be in a digital tool. For example, being able to give more choices at the end of a roll, not just a fail and success, can often cause you to like have to flip through a book to try to find what are the options for that specific move, for example, like an apocalypse world where you can, I want to do a move, and then there's response things that happen in the middle that's not just fail or whatever. But those are sometimes specific to the move. Well, we can deliver those to you in the at the moment that the result happens. So you can say like, I rolled a this, here are those things. And that becomes more easy and more available because you have digital tools to do that when you would never be able to do that with just pen and paper. And so that's what I'm really, really excited about is not just creating a place for people to play online, which is the sort of heart and soul of what we do, but creating digital tools that make role-playing games easier to play wherever you are.
That's
introduce
a really,
new options.
Yeah, that's a really amazing point. I think the idea of me as a DM prepping my session, but kind of prepping my virtual like tools, you know what I mean, as a part of the like planning process, is kind of something I do already. But I go to like a lot of disparate kind of different sites, and I'll kind of have tabs open, and you know what I mean. Like the idea of kind of having a sort of centralized place for a lot of
all
those tools. You know, I can even see why I would use Roll20 then, like when we're in person. You know what I mean? So using a lot of those tools just for the ease and access of, you know, all of that information and things like you mentioned. And I think thinking of it like that as like a, almost like this little virtual toolkit for me as the DM is like, that's really exciting for me, especially, you know, you know, now, like, I know myself and Jeremy's particularly like, you know, we run a lot of games, you know, for loads of different groups, and, you know, people can hire us and stuff like that. So, you know, I'll be running, you know, two or three games a week at times with completely different people. So having all of those things like readily available is like an absolute godsend. So that's definitely made me very, very excited, and I'll be purchasing as many shares of Roll20 now as I can. Is that that's how that works, right? I can just purchase shares of the company.
Yeah. Stocks, cool. Bonds,
stocks,
as soon as
and
we
bonds.
Have an idea, we'll let you know.
Thank you.
I also, I guess, one last question, which was, you've mentioned Andrew several times. You've mentioned other parts of Roll20 aside from the VTT. Could you just explain what some of those are? Just because I've seen, I think, glimpses of some of the non-VTT stuff, but I'd love to hear from you.
Yeah. So as our team has grown, we have divided into lots of different parts so that we can work on a lot of different things at a time. It's one of the reasons why it's like, when customers say, why are you doing that part and not this part? Well, we have lots of different teams that are working on lots of different things. In fact, we have multiple roadmaps. It's not just one roadmap for our company. It is multiple things that we're working on all at once. I can tell you some of the things that are currently public that we consider as like parts of the umbrella of Roll20, and that is the marketplace. We've just added drive-through. We also have a marketplace on our own, and you'll start to see, in fact, new changes to some of those things as we start to squish those two things together more. And I would expect for you to see, in fact, you can already start to, Morgan, keep me honest here. What was the we just integrated with drive-through recently in the last couple of
so fresh. We added support for Pathfinder Infinite, Starfinder Infinite, Miskatonic Repository. So those are like kind of more closer to licensed community creation. It's DM's Guild type things for other publishers. And we're now opening up the ability to sell Roll20 modules on DM's Guild at large who are working outside of published content.
Cool, okay.
But besides just the marketplace, so we want to be a place where people can buy their content and use that content in a lot of different ways. Besides that, we also, Morgan mentioned a being able to build a character outside of the game today, which now, because of other digital tools that are out there, seems like an obvious thing that should happen, right? I want to go to this thing and make a character. I don't want to have to create a game and then get into the game and then ask the GM to make me a character sheet and then make, right? You don't want to do all that. You want to just make a character. And so that's something that's coming out soon.
That's very exciting.
We've talked a little bit about it. I think Morgan even showed a little bit of it recently.
On the reroll,
So there's that. And then there's a few other sort of projects that we can't talk about that will be coming, that will sort of add to this sort of umbrella effect.
Yeah. There are a few other smaller things that are very much, you know, right now they're very much a part of the VTT experience, but they have the opportunity to be more, you know, so for example, the compendium is our, you know, digitized version of books. And right now that's particularly useful if you're using one of our character sheets, but you know, there's a lot of space for that to become something that's more useful and usable. As a key feature, we also think a lot about like our forums and our social tools. And inside of the forum, there's, you know, a little tiny looking for a group tool. And, you know, we've got the jukebox. It's something we think about a lot too. So there's, you know, there's lots of different pieces that kind of come together. Obviously right now it's very focused on the virtual tabletop, but.
Amazing. I think just as a final thing, just because it's something we do with all of our guests, and I'd be remiss if we didn't have to do it with you, which is just we always ask for something that's called the tale from the table. This can be absolutely anything. It could be something bonkers that's happened. It can be something that's like really emotional that happened. Just like a little moment that like kind of springs to your mind. It can absolutely be something that you've played on Roll20. It could be something you've played at the table.
I mean, it might be a tale from the virtual table.
Maybe a tale from the virtual table.
Maybe.
You know?
What?
But yeah, if there's anything that jumps into your mind, we always love hearing these stories, and we get such a lovely variety of them. So, yeah.
Morgan, do you want to go first? Do you want a minute to think?
I think I need a second to think.
Okay, sure. I can
Lots
go.
Of options.
This is probably one of my favorite stories because it includes some of my favorite people. It is not virtual.
Oh, nice.
It is a at-home game. It was with my family. I have two daughters and my wife. Of course, we're going to play, right? Mm-hmm. And so I had created this sort of like iconic kind of campaign for them, especially this was a while ago when they were both young. My oldest daughter was around 8, and my youngest was around 4 or 5-ish. Mm-hmm. And then my wife was playing as well. And so they all had created characters. My oldest daughter, who was primarily the focus, right? Because she could actually interact with it. She was playing this sort of druid character. And primarily she knew, okay, I can turn into animals. That's the thing that she was like, okay, cool. Mm. The youngest was playing a wild sorcerer fairy dragon couldn't talk, obviously, because she would just sort of spout things. Just things would just happen. And it was primarily a narrative device for me, but she really enjoyed rolling dice. So there was that.
Amazing.
Oh.
And then my wife played sort of a knight protector. And the story was basically around like this princess who was going out and like doing things, right? Sort of independent princess doing things with a knight protector that would help her along the way. Mm-hmm. And so her father, the king, gave her a mission that sent her out of the castle. And on the way to that mission, I thought, because one of the things I love about role-playing games is that ability for you to kind of pause everything and think about what you might actually do in that situation, right? Mm-hmm. How would my character respond? How might I respond? And it can be almost therapeutic in a lot of ways. And I wanted to present this to my daughter, sort of this dilemma. And so I thought, okay, there is a kid that steals something and he's been punished, right?
Yeah.
But it's sort of the normal sort of Aladdin kind of thing, right? But he runs away. And so she follows and sees where he goes. And she notices that he stole something to feed his mother, who is no longer has work. And so this hit a string with my daughter, who is only 8, remember? And she was like, oh, this is a problem I have to solve. Forget about the quest that I have been sent on, but this is a problem I need to solve. I didn't initially think that she was going to go down this route, but you yes and you go.
Yeah, of course.
And so she was like, okay, this woman needs a job. I have power. I can give her a job. So she asked, like, can you help me in the castle and we will give you a job? And I was like, this is awesome. But then I started thinking, like, okay, let's play into logistics, right? The yes and part. So I was like, well, she said, this NPC, how am I going to let them know that you've told me this? Will you go back to, well, no, I'm currently going towards a thing. I can't go back. This is an important thing. How am I going to let them know that I have given you permission to have a job in the thing, right? So now there's this sort of dilemma. And so she goes like this. She goes, and she kind of taps her face with her finger. And then she goes, I've got it. And she stands up, but we're going to need a bunch of bunnies. And I was like, what?
What do you mean?
How is this? She was like, I know that I can speak with animals, right? And I was like, Yeah, you can speak with animals. Okay, cool. So I'm going to get a bunch of bunnies, and I'm going to tell them what it is, and they're going to go back to the castle, and they're going to tell everybody at the castle that you are supposed to have a job here. And so that was her whole plan, is like, I'm going to need a bunch of bunnies.
I love it. I love this plan. So absolutely good. On board. Oh, so this is literally good. The family unit I want to have in the future. Like, yeah, I'm going to be GMing. And,
sounds magical.
Flash forward a couple of years. That's what I want to happen. I want to be that. I want that to be happening in my house.
So now in our house, when there's like, when we need to solve a problem, we're always like, well, I'm going to need a bunch of bunnies.
Yes.
That's awesome. Oh,
that's absolutely amazing.
That's so good.
I love that.
That's so cute.
Morgan, did anything spring to mind for you, Morgan? Yeah.
Yeah. So, man, this is not as great as this. I can never be as cute as kids. A couple years back, when it was still in the playtest version, I got together all of my friends who are into magical girl anime, and we played the playtest of Girl by Moonlight.
This sounds great already.
Which is a game I've been super stoked about ever since, and dying for it to come out. And it's not my that's not my genre specifically. The Girl by Moonlight like play set that I was the most interested in was the one that was a little bit more like, you know, the big mecha space opera one. I knew I had a bunch of friends that were really into it, so I got them together, and that system is like so good at provoking the group to create really compelling interpersonal relationships. And so, you know, even though it was just a one shot we were running, by the time we were done with the initial like question answering phase at the start of it, like there was this like just intricate web of like, this person's in love with this person, but it's unrequited, and this person's in love with this person, but they haven't had the courage to speak it yet. And it just led to this epic moment at the very end where they were confronting the secretly villainous mentor of one of the characters. And it just became this like crazy dramatic scene because of the way that the dice rolls went, where they revealed their villainy, and the person lunged in with, with their sword to the love interest with this, the whole unrequited thing.
No.
And we just had one of those like ridiculously melodramatic moments of the, like, of the person who had never spoken of their love, like leaping in front of the blade and like taking almost a fatal wound. It's based on the Blades in the Dark system, that like one step below fatal wound. And then like confesses their love, like on the sword blade of their mentor who had betrayed them. And it was just one of those like over the top melodramatic moments that like, I love games that can create stuff like that.
It's like I feel like it's one of those sessions where you leave and you're like, I need to like go play just like a mundane video game or something to unwind. You know what
Switch
I mean? Like,
my
I
brain.
Need to like, I need to get that out of my system somehow, because I'm not gonna sleep like this. Yeah. I had that very recently.
I'm not gonna stop thinking about it. I'm not gonna stop writing fan fiction about it.
Yeah.
Sorry, Jasper, you played a game recently.
No. We were traveling back from the game and just like talking about it. Like, oh, so tired. Cut to like 3 hours later, we're still there talking about it. Like, and then this bit, and then this bit. You know what I mean? It's just we gotta go to bed. Like, we gotta end this. That's amazing.
That's the moment I play for.
Exactly. That's exactly it. I think.
Especially like, and when systems can draw that out in like a one shot, like we had no time with these characters and we're falling into these moments. So good.
Yeah, absolutely.
Feels like such a wonderful like sweet spot, especially, which I think only TTRPGs can give you, you know, only that kind of like intense role-playing experience gives you. And I think part of the reason why we all still play them and we love them so much, and why you guys do such amazing work over at Roll20. So all that's left for me to do is to say thank you so much for giving up your time to come on, talk to us, and tell us about Roll20. I'm really, really excited for everything that you've got coming in the future. It sounds like you've got some really epic stuff coming down the line. So the last thing is just to sort of throw over to you guys, if there's anything that you would love our listeners, anything else that you'd love our listeners to know about, anything you want to plug, and also if you're sort of online and whatever, and people can follow you, where people can do that as well. Whoever wants to jump in.
Well, I'm Geek Stress, like it looks like Geek Stress on social media. And also I can send over some links. I would love if there are people who are interested in getting involved as content creators or, you know, publishers or, you know, indie creators who want to get started, I'll send you all some links to share with your viewers about how they can get set up with that stuff.
We'd love to do that. We'll pop all those links into the description below. So whatever podcasting app you're using right now, if you go into below, there'll be all of those links there. So that, yeah, that'd be lovely. Yeah. Thank you.
And, you know, the reason why we're out here doing, you know, why we're trying to get out and be, you know, more publicly facing, Andrew and I, is really to like solicit more feedback, engage more in an open dialogue with folks. So please take us seriously, give us feedback by whatever mechanism you want to. And then, you know, we're happy to come back if you see something that we do that's exciting that you want to talk about in the future.
Even if you feel very strongly about that and can't
if you want to yell
modulate
at
your response. We want to hear even that feedback.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think it's such a golden opportunity. It's so nice to see. Yeah.
Absolutely. It's so lovely to have people speak so candidly about, like, you know, what you want to do, where you feel like you're at, where you want to go. You know, I think that's a really, really lovely thing. And I think it will definitely encourage people. You know, I can already imagine it would encourage a lot of our listeners to kind of be more active in sharing that feedback, where, you know, normally you might just go, nothing will probably happen. And, you know, it's not super important. I'll just leave it. So, I think this is a doing an absolutely amazing job. So, thank you. Andrew.
Yeah. So you can follow me on Twitter. AC Searles is my Twitter handle. I do some stuff there. You can also I have a podcast that I do. I haven't done it in a long time, but it's called The Artificer's Portal. And it talks about how technology is changing the way we play. And it talks with some of the people that create technology and why they're doing it and should they be doing it how they should be doing it. It's more of a sort of a industry like podcast where we're trying to shape and understand and have intelligent conversations around the sort of confluence of technology and role-playing games. It's a topic I love.
Very
amazing.
Cool.
Well, once again, thank you so much for giving up your time and talk to us about this. Liv, where can people find you on the internet?
Oh, I'm about on the internet. You can find me over on Twitter. I'm at Does Dark Magic. You can find me on most other platforms as Olivia Does Dark Magic. That's correct, yes. You can also find us on YouTube, youtube.com/3blackhalflings. It's the number 3 Black Halflings. There's a bunch of stuff, and we're going to be recording some stuff soon. It's going to be very fun. And I haven't told Jeremy and Jasper what it's going to be, and I'm very excited to see your reaction.
That's just been like a, hey, I've got a video idea. You know, guys, free? You guys free? And I'm like, okay.
When you're free.
We'll be free. This is fine. It's like doing this.
Then I just giggle and scuttle away.
Lips of Scarlet.
That's so true. So me. I'm also over on ABS, always be Scotland. That's what I say all the time.
I think that's used for something else, actually.
I don't think so, Andrew. I think it's ABS, always be Scotland.
I was thinking of like the opening of Glengarry Glen Ross, but instead of Alec Baldwin, it's Liv.
It's me.
Liv, can you just say fuck you, that's my name, real quick?
Fuck you, that's my name.
No, is that right? Somebody's like, what's your name? And you're like, fuck you, that's my name.
Oh, I see. Oh, yeah, fuck you, that's my name.
There we go. Nice.
Is that good?
Yeah,
is that
that's amazing. It.
Apologies, Morgan and Andrew.
For
just swearing in front of you twice. But yes, also, I do a bunch of other tabletop things, board games and RPGs and card games, all of those things over on Dicebreaker. youtube.com/Dicebreaker is a thing that I'm on. Thank you.
Nice. And Jeremy, where can people find you on the Tintwebs?
You can find me at Jeremy Cobb 1 on Twitter, and that's Cobb with 2 B's and the number 1. Also on Instagram at The Cobbmeister. You can find me on The Quantum Reactor, a sci-fi movie review podcast that I do with my buddy Andrew Coons. You can follow us at Q Reactor Show and find The Quantum Reactor wherever pods are cast. And also, I've been streaming recently. You can find me streaming as of this recording. I've been streaming the game Fallout New Vegas on Tuesdays and Thursdays. starting at 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern. We're calling this the Ballad of Slamtacular Stan because that is my character's name. I'm nice. Playing a character named Slamtacular Stan, and I'm slamming my way across the Mojave Wastes. So come,
always be
yeah,
slamming.
Come check that out on Twitch, twitch.tv/casualquestlive. So come check that out and follow the Ballad of Slamtacular Stan. How about you, Jasper?
You can also find Jeremy. I just want to say, you can also find Jeremy Ooh. After this recording on Twitter at Jeremy Roll 20 Cobb. We'll be able to follow a lot of his activity.
You'll be able to follow a lot of stuff on
My side account. just retweeting everything Roll 20 announces.
Jeremy's legally just only like allowed to wear Roll 20 merchandise when he leaves the house now.
By the way, Andrew, I wanted to talk to you about that. How many figures were we talking on this? How many figures?
I think it was two.
Two with several zeros behind it.
Two followed by zeros. That's funny. You can follow me on social media at JW_Cartwright. I am a semi-permanent guest on Games and Feelings and the Performance Capture podcast. I was recently did a couple bonus episodes of 8-Bit Book Club over on NADPod, which was a ton of fun, so go listen to those. And we've got a bunch of stuff happening over on our Patreon, including some hopefully some new and exciting changes over there. So if you want to check that out, the links are all below, but it's patreon.com/TB Halflings. You can follow the show at 3 Black Halflings. That's the number 3 Black Halflings on all of our social media. We've got merch. We've got YouTubes. We got all the things. Check it out. Thank you so much again to our amazing guests for today. I'm very excited to dive more into Roll20 stuff and in the future. And I hope you all are too. But until then, we will talk to you next week. So long, Shire folk.
So long, Shire folk.
So long, Shire folk.
Okay, beautiful. We're done. Thank you so much, guys. Appreciate
it. Thank you so much, both.
Stage fright.
It's too late.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.